Welcome to another edition of Father Time. I'm joined, as always, by my producer and partner, Mr. Andy Lerner.
How are you?
No kids still?
You know, I got a call.
Yeah, you don't have kids. Shut up. Our guest today, we don't know each other well. We've crossed paths many times. One of the biggest comics in the country. You would know him as Bert the Conqueror on the Travel Channel.
Yeah.
Trip Flip, Goddamn Comedy Jam, This Is Not Happening, your own special, Bert Kreischer, The Machine.
Yep. That was, you can find that legally now on my YouTube channel. My story, if you guys don't know, I got involved with the Russian Mafia when I was 22 and robbed a train. That story is online. You can find that.
Yeah, we don't need to rehash that. My guest today, Mr. Bert Kreischer. That is the greatest story of all time. I told somebody you were coming today, and they were like, dude, is that the guy with the Russian mob? I go, yeah, that's the guy.
It's so funny. We were talking about this before. This dude ran up to me last night, and I loved his story. We were doing another season of This Is Not Happening, and I've been hosting the they do like a weekly edition at the store, and I've been hosting it. I love listening to good stories, and there's this guy, Byron Bowers, who has a great fucking story. And I told him, I go, dude, your story's fucking awesome. And he goes, that's coming from you. That's a huge compliment. And I was like, what? He was like, you're like the storyteller. And I was like, no, I'm just a dick joke comic. Like,
you are a storyteller.
I am. I didn't realize it.
It is set up punchline, because I remember walking into the improv and watching you just blow the room apart. And it was, you think you're telling dick jokes, but you're just, I'm sure in college you were the guy. I was like, oh my God, you got to, Kreischer, tell that fucking story.
Dude, I've learned how to tell stories in high school. So freshman year of high school, I went to an all-boys Catholic high school. And basically the rule was, if you sat down at the table, you better have a reason to be there. You better be able to recap the weekend good.
Right.
And I remember telling stories about our weekends there, and I would destroy, and I was like, oh. And then they would come in, and they'd be like, Bert, come here. Came and just said us what happened this weekend, but you tell us what happened. And I go, well, did he tell you about the dog? And everybody would be like, no! I was like, it all starts with the dog. And so I learned how to tell stories there. And then in my fraternity, when I got in fraternity, it was all being around guys. It's my comedy is very guy, bro-centric, I'd say, because that's who I am. That's who I always told stories to. I never really was like, I was never really good with chicks.
Your shows are like, it's like you're at a frat party and everyone, you're in the kitchen telling stories and everyone just kind of gravitated toward the kitchen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the older I've gotten, the more I've realized they don't need, like right now I'm just talking about my family. I'm telling stories about my daughters, about my dad, about everything that's going on like in my life now. And I feel like sometimes like when I go up to the store, I feel like I'm the lame old guy. Like,
welcome to my, that's my entire act.
Yeah.
And honestly, it seems like a perfect segue to go into it. But you've recounted so many of your crazy, I mean, you were the inspiration for Van Wilder.
Yeah.
You had your college life story optioned by Oliver Stone to make into a film.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The Rolling Stone magazine discovered me in 1997 and called me the number one party animal in the country. And that changed my life.
How did they find you?
They wanted to write an article about Florida State. So they started calling up the people at the school, people, heads of organizations, president of the student body.
Everybody.
And everyone said my name. They were like, you got to hang out with Bert. You got to hang out with Bert.
That's hilarious.
And so they called me. I was in the middle of a bong hit. And the guy's like, this is Eric Hedegaard from Rolling Stone magazine. And I was like, whatever. And I was taking a bong hit. I heard his pitch. I exhaled at the end of his pitch. And he was like, oh, I'm sorry, are you doing a bong hit? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, oh, my God, you're my guy.
You're the guy.
And so he showed up down at Florida State. Spent a week with me. And once again, I think his intention was to write an article about the school. But it was too broad a subject. So they just changed it and made it about me. And it was like...
And you weren't even a comic or anything at the time. You were just a college kid.
I was just a loud, obnoxious, fun-loving party guy, and then I said in the article I wanted to do stand-up, so this radio station put together a stand-up show first night I'd ever done stand-up. It was at Potbelly's, sold out. Four comics go up in front of me, each doing like 15 to 20 minutes. I do 30 minutes to close the show.
Never done stand-up before.
Never done stand-up.
Just does 30.
It's, by the way, I will say, there's times where I realize my path in comedy has been so diverted by what everyone else was doing as opposed to doing my own thing,
right,
that had I just probably stayed in Florida and had I moved to Key West, which was an odd plan, moved to Key West and done stand-up by myself with no outside influence, I would have gotten to where I am today a lot quicker. But I think you get caught up in like, I got to be able to do an impression. I got to be able to do
set up punch. Instead of just being yourself.
Someone told me, and in New York, very quickly, I excelled very quickly in New York because I didn't know how to write a joke. So I would just sit there and go like, I remember telling two stories that ended up on my hour special. Like one night we had a storytelling show, me and DC Benny in Soho. And I told these like four stories that ended up all being on my special. And I remember like, I think I figured stand up out for me, but I just got, you get veered back into like, I need a punchline. I need to set up punch. I need like, you know what cops hate? When you touch their faces. You know, and then you end up.
Of course, there it is.
Punchline. Now I'm getting more back to like, I think now I'm more back to my authentic voice. Like my, but you got it. The journey is a journey. So,
but it's funny because before this, we were talking about storytelling with other people. I find myself, you know, I've been on stage a million times. I judge other people's story. Like if somebody's telling me a story at a party or something and they're not a performer and the story is going on and on, part of me wants to go, cut, you, all right, that part's, you don't need that.
It's what you're finding.
Get to the end. You're killing me.
What you're finding interesting in this story is not, in fact, interesting.
Right.
Like that's, you want to say that that's, the majority of every story could be surmised with, I didn't need to hear all of that.
I didn't need all, most of that. Yeah. Yeah. And you're not a funny person. Stop talking.
I'm doing it too. Like you got to realize when I tell a story on stage, the first time I tell it's perfect.
Perfect.
The first time.
It's so perfect.
If I could stay to that, but then I start working on it and trying to, and I clumsy it up and I make it longer. And I'm like, the fuck am I doing with this story? But it takes me a year to get a story up and running. Like, I was just talking to Ari about this, and it's the truth. It takes me one full year to get a story perfect. Like, sometimes longer. The machine story took 4 years to get right.
Right.
Like, it's just you, and this is what separates us from them, okay? If you're listening and you're like, I want to be a comic, this is what is holding you back, is I am willing to go on stage for 1 year every single night and fail. Every single night.
Yeah.
And that's it. That's it. That's it. That's all
for that one night where it clicks and you improvise like the extra two or three punchlines that push it over the top and you're like, oh my god, did I record that? I did,
dude. And like I'll tell you, this is a perfect example. I had a really great story. It was just a conversation. I was like, there's something here. My daughter one night woke me up and asked me in the middle of the night, asked me if I believed in time travel, and I was like, what the fuck? And then she's like, I go, yeah. And she goes, is it possible that I came back from the future to tell myself a secret? And I'm like, holy shit, yes, this is how it happens. And then I go, yeah, why? And she goes, it's all I need to know. Good night. And went left.
Oh, Jesus.
So that is a story. But I go, and then I had like two other instances with my daughters. And so I realized, and by the way, it's just messing up. One time I tell the beginning of that story, the beginning of it, and I change subjects and I tell another story about my daughter keeping her deodorant in the refrigerator. And we're like, what's she doing with the deodorant in the refrigerator? And my wife's like, don't ask. Her name's on the cap, name on the base. And so one morning I see her. She opens the refrigerator. She takes out her deodorant. She takes the top off, swipes her finger across it, rubs it above her lip, puts it back, and shuts the door. I'm like, what the fuck was that? And she just looks at me and goes, mind your own business, and leaves.
Jesus.
So one time I tell the beginning of the time travel story where I say I had too much marijuana, which is true. I'm laying in bed, I'm trying to sleep. My daughter walks in the room. Then I tell the deodorant story. Then I come back and finish. I just forgot. And I come back and I finish the time travel story. Do you believe in time travel? Is it possible I came out for the future to tell myself a secret? Yeah, that's all I need to know. And then I tag it with, and this is the way it works. As I go, now I'm paralyzed thinking that there's a 30-year-old version of my daughter in her room in a lab coat going, what did he say? And she's like, he said, I told you, listen, your dad's going to die tonight, but we can save his life. I need you to get your deodorant and put it in the refrigerator. Yeah. And so it just takes doing it enough where you mess it up one time and it works, and then you go, that's how it's done. It's just, it's
They're
a beautiful.
Happy accidents.
Happy accidents.
Yeah.
It's, and you know, I, and the other thing I'll say is it you need to hang around with the savages, like the killers. I go to the store twice a week probably. I love stand-up. I don't need to do that. I don't need to do that because I already talk enough during the weekend. The reason I do it is that if I'm sitting there and I tell a joke and Bill Burr goes, that's fucking good, then you should remember that.
That's a good joke.
Like I said one time on stage, and I didn't, it was a throwaway. I was like, I said, someone said, do you read? And I was like, no. I go, I don't read. I go, look, I'm not a bright guy. I used to think Helen Keller and Anne Frank were the same person. And Rogan lost his shit. And he goes, that better be a fucking bit. And I go, nah, I would have never remembered it. And that's what happens on the road. But if you go in the store and you do your bit, like last night, someone was like, I had this story about, buying my wife pajamas for Christmas, and Adam, who's the booker there, comes up and he goes, I fucking love that story. I was like, oh, cool. And like, yeah. So you're like, oh, that works. So, but yeah, it's...
I've had that where they give... My friends will come up and go, hey, you know that... You can have a callback punchline for that block that doesn't have a punchline at the very end. I go, he's like, this is your out. And you're like, oh, yeah. Dude. Oh, that does fit perfectly. But you're too close to it. You can't see it. So it is cool to have a group of friends who kind of go, hey, man.
Tom Segura's got the best story. It's one of my favorite stories. And he was telling it to me, and he did not... he didn't know, he didn't get it. He didn't understand it. He was too close to it.
Yeah.
It's my favorite story. I'm going to tell it quickly only because, and this is my buddy Tom Segura's story, but I'll tell you what I loved about this story is, I love this story. This is an example of artistic integrity because I watched him fail with it. To me, and it didn't work. And I was like, I can tell that story. I know. And that's the beauty of being around great comics is that they go, I'll tell you what you're doing wrong. Ari and I do it to ourselves all the time. He was in a taxi cab, and he found a wallet. He's in D.C. He's meeting his cousin. They were going to go have dinner or whatever. He found a wallet. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, fuck. So he, going back to his hotel room, he calls the number. He looks it up, calls the number. Dude answers the phone. He goes, yeah. He goes, is Jason there? And he's like, nah. His name's not Jason. I forget his name. He's like, nah, he's not here. He goes, well, I found his wallet. And he goes, fuck him. And he goes, excuse me? He goes, fuck him. He goes, who is this? And he goes, I'm his dad. He's a piece of shit. And I go, what? And he goes, he's a piece of shit. I don't give a shit about him. Fuck him. And Tom goes, Tom's like, okay. And he goes, well, regardless, I have his wallet. Can I send it to you? And he goes, I don't want it. Fuck him. And he's like, all right. And he hangs up. And Tom's like, that was the weirdest interaction I've ever had. So that next night, he's there for like three nights. That next night, he goes out to dinner with his cousin, and he starts to tell his cousin the story. As he does, he's interrupted by the waiter. The waiter is fucking Jason. Tom's like, holy shit, dude, I have your wallet. And Jason just looks at him and he goes, can I have it back? And he goes, I don't have it with me. Like, it's in my hotel room. And he's like, oh, hey, what do you guys want to drink? And Tom's like, hold on one second.
I have your wallet.
He's like, you're not going to stop for a second and go, isn't this fucking amazing that I found your wallet and now you're my waiter?
It's
and the guy
so
goes,
random.
"The goes, yeah, I guess so. What do you guys want to drink? I'm kind of slammed." And Tom's like, hold one second. I found your wallet in a fucking taxi and now I'm here. And the guy goes, yeah, that's great. And Tom goes, here's my number. Call me and we'll set up a time for you to pick it up. And the guy's like, cool. So they do dinner and the guy doesn't mention it one more time. So the next day, Tom's in his hotel and he gets a call from Jason and he goes, hey, I'm downstairs. You want to run my wallet down? And Tom's like, no, you come up here. I'm in room 810. And the guy's like, all right. So he comes up to the stairs, knocks on the door, and Tom goes, hey, man. And he's like, my wallet? And he's like, yeah. And he gives it to him, and the guy walks away. Now, that's where Tom's story ended. He shut the door.
I got an ending.
Yeah. But Tom, as do I.
Yeah.
He opens the door, sticks his head out, and he goes, Jason, you know what? Your dad was right. You're a piece of shit.
How did Tom not tag it with that?
Because it didn't happen.
Of course not.
Because that's natural progression of storytelling. But for number one, when he told the story, the conversation with his dad was lessened. It was lessened. So I was, but as when you're listening to it, what you hear is the conversation with his dad. That's fucking weird. What Tom was hung on was, how crazy is it that I ran into this guy and he didn't care that I found his, like, but
it's true though. You're so close to the story, you can't see the forest for the trees. Yeah, all of us were like, that's the ending.
Yeah, but Tom, we were in the car and I go, dude, you didn't say anything? He goes, no. But that's, you know, that's the other thing is that I have a very difficult time exaggerating in my stories. I don't mind exaggerating for a laugh.
I'll bump it at the end.
Yeah, I don't mind.
That's a bump at the end that's obviously you didn't do, but I also feel like the audience would have seen that one coming. You almost want to take it and twist, because as audience members, we all saw it a mile away.
I think Tom
My ending was he calls the dad back and goes, you're right.
That's not bad. Or to peek out your head and go, hey man, you should call your dad. Seriously, you guys should work it out.
He did it on one of his specials, I think, and but it's just like,
it's so funny, man.
It's by
you
shout
can teach
out to
it.
Tom Segura.
I mean, it is so funny. There should be classes because everyone thinks they're storytellers, and you go, dude, this is fucking 10 minutes for a 15 second story. You're killing me.
The greatest stories sometimes, and I look at it because I don't do setup punch. I was talking to Mark Norman the other day. Mark Norman is a straight up joke writer.
Yeah.
And he's like, I don't know another way to do it. And I was like, that's so funny. I can't do it that way.
Same.
But like, my best stories sometimes are just like the short ones. But the key to story, I believe, the key to storytelling is an ending. You need an ending. I didn't realize it's got to be
one they can't see coming.
By the way, I didn't realize this until like 2 weeks ago. I'm sitting with this kid who's been doing stand-up 4 years. We're in Calgary. I tell that deodorant time travel story, and it gets an applause break. Every show it gets an applause break. And I go, that's odd. I've never had that happen. And I said to the kid, I go, why do you think they're clapping? And he goes, because they know it's over. And I was like, oh, when there's something really, really tangible as an audience member to go, that's the end.
It's like a song.
Yeah, it's like a song. And yeah. I went, oh, I need more endings. I need more endings. Like
complete bodies of work that are beginning, middle, and end that are set. Like, I'm not a set-up punchline guy. I can appreciate it. I love
it.
Danger feels the best of all time.
I love it. I can sit through it.
It's not what I do.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of them because when I do on stage, it was probably like you, it's so much commitment.
Yeah.
I'm jealous of a guy who can write a setup and punchline and do it, just stand there quietly and tell jokes. I wish I could do it, but I have to act stuff out and get involved, and I'm exhausted.
Can I tell you, I sat through, by the way, if this is too inside baseball for you guys, we'll get to like my dad and stuff in a second, this is what I love about podcasting is hearing comics talk about comedy.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I watched Bill Burr last night. I will go on record by saying Bill Burr is the best comic of our generation. No questions asked. And Bill would hate me saying that. I mad respect, big shout outs to Dave Chappelle. He's awesome, but he is no Bill Burr. I promise you that. Bill Burr goes up with new material every fucking night, and it blows my mind.
I was in New York. Yeah. I don't even know Bill personally. I've never met him. I've seen him backstage a couple times. I went and bought tickets with a bunch of my friends and took them to see him at Caroline's because I was like, this is the dude. You have to go. As a comic, I paid money and went and saw Bill Burr because he's a destroyer.
We did a show last night. I hosted. I did because it was our company, the All Things Comedy brand.
Yeah.
And we wanted to say something up front because there was industry in the audience. And then I was supposed to go on before Bill. And I was like, no, I'll just host and I'll just bring everyone up and I'll give them really good intros because it's all our comics on the podcasting network. And I got off stage and I ran around and I sat in the corner of the store, sold out room. And Bill Burr took subjects that I've never heard someone talk negatively about the troops.
And win it.
And fucking.
And just destroy.
Destroyed.
I love people who can do that.
Crying laughing to the point where I started grabbing one of the guys that works at the store going like, share this moment with me. And then we get off and he's like, you want to get a drink? And I was like, yeah, but I'm just going to be juggling your jock all the time because I'm blown away by what you just did. And it's so different than what I do. I have a really hard time taking, you know, and I wonder if it's because people see me as one thing. They see me as a fun-loving party guy. I just want to hear your fun stories. I just want to have a good time.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear your views on catcalling, you know, but like that, Bill Burr takes something like that and destroys with it. And it was all new.
He'll also open with, like, he'll bury it. He'll go, fuck the troops.
Yeah.
Like right out of the chute. And people are like, all right, but hold on. Give him, and he digs a hole and then just climbs out of it. It's crazy.
It was so. And the other thing that blew me away is he has no problem embracing physicality. Yeah. That's a problem I have, only because I was so physical because I had so little talent when I was younger. Like when I was first started, I was like fucking all over the place. Like, do you remember Chicken?
Yes.
Yeah, I was like Chicken. Like,
that's funny.
With a little bit more of an act. No offense. Shout out to Chicken. He's dead. But like I was, by the way, shout out to Desus and Miro because that's where I'm getting shout outs from.
We'll put those in the post credits.
Shout out.
What's in shout outs?
Yeah. So, I was so physical that when I started becoming a better stand up, I stopped being physical. I started like going, let's get smaller. Let's get smaller and work on the words. Like, and
let's also less exercise involved.
Yeah, but now watching Bill last night, I was like, there's nothing wrong with a little physicality. Like, there's nothing.
That's
like,
what you do.
Let it happen. Yeah. Like, and it's. I did this joke last night about my dad. I'm working on a big chunk with my dad. You know, you get inspirations from people, and then you go like, oh, fuck. Freddie Soto. Do you remember Freddie Soto?
Yeah. Freddie, I featured for him pretty shortly before his passing.
Do you remember his chunk about putting shit together with his dad?
Yeah.
And he's like, irregardless.
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 That's not a word, Pop. Oh, irregardless.
Oh, but if I was one of your friends with the fucking beers and... Oh, What that does to an audience member is it brings them to a communal place where everyone shares with that. And I'd been doing jokes about my dad, and it wasn't until last night that Adam said this to me. I did two jokes about my dad where I was like back to back, just in between comics. I just did them, and I was like, I fucking love that. I want to meet your dad. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, oh yeah, like oh I can. Oh yeah, why have I been distancing myself from my childhood experiences?
All right, well listen, that is the best segue.
Yeah.
Of all time, because
I want another cocktail. Can we
pause?
No. Can we just? Maybe,
no. We're paused. I just want
Jameson on the rocks. All right, we're back.
We got Jameson. We're back.
Yeah, I love. That's a part of podcasting.
You pounded that Manhattan. I made it with a little Amaro and some orange bitters. That's the trick. Tasty, right?
Yeah, it's too much work for me. Like when you drink the Malai,
I'll come over your house. Like, you're close.
I got to be on my podcast. Yeah. Both of you guys, I'd love to have you on.
Andy, I don't know about that.
I used to tour for Jameson. This is a really good story. Not good story. Now I've built it up. I used to tour for Jameson. $5,000 a week. Me, that's what you got paid.
What?
All you had to do is 20 minutes. Me, Billy Gardell, Steve Byrne, Danny Bevins,
I remember
Pete Corielli,
that tour.
Michael Loftus.
Remember it.
And we would go. We'd fly
you
first class.
You get $5,000 a week?
$5,000 a week. And they send you cases.
And there's four of you?
Four of you.
Yeah.
They'd send you.
And it's a killer lineup.
And they'd paper the fucking room. Jameson was just foot the bill. And
it was
then
an advertising.
And we had to drink Jameson on stage. They send you a case of Jameson every month.
You weren't going to do it anyway.
All the new stuff they had. I remember the first night we got our case of Jameson, and then Billy was like thinking about. Billy is sober now.
He's been sober a long time.
And I was like, and he was like, I don't know what I got the case. I don't know what I'm going to do with it. And I was like, I'll take it. I already drank mine. He's like, you already drank yours?
No, this morning I drank the whole thing. It's gone.
And so
it came this morning. What are you talking about?
So we.
That's what convinced him to get sober.
We did. We did like a few years tour. It was the funnest you've ever had with comics. So much fun. Had to drink every Ireland. Every St. Patty's Day, they fly us to Ireland, first class, put us up, make us do a show on the distillery. We do radio tours on the distillery floor.
How was I not on that tour?
And then you ready for the mic drop? So they cancel the tour. They call us up and they go, listen, you know, we've been bought by Absolute. We're not going to continue with the tour, but as a note of gratitude, we'd like to give you each an acre of land in Ireland.
Shut up!
What the fuck?
That's insane.
Are you fucking
we
kidding?
We each got an acre of land in Ireland, all next to each other on a river in Cork.
How much? What's it worth?
I think nothing.
Is it just?
I think you can't build on it.
Is it like when people give you the star? I named a star after you for Christmas.
It might be $80 bucks. But we have a deed.
We
have a deed and a picture of our property that I have up in my man cave.
But that's such a left field thing. I mean, it's amazing to me.
They were cool as shit. They were really fun. So every time I drink Jameson,
that's pretty wild.
But back to my dad.
Here's the Jameson.
So here we go. Where'd you grow up?
Tampa.
Tampa. Oh, that may okay. It all falling into place now.
This is a joke now that I'm telling. I didn't realize it was a joke. I told it to Ron Bennington. Tampa was so fucked up because you didn't know you were fucked up. Like you didn't know that. Like I knew two people growing up that didn't have tongues. Like that.
Andy can't even control.
Yeah.
Like were they born without them or they were removed?
I don't know. They couldn't. They didn't never told us.
They didn't learn how to write.
They weren't big on talking.
Yeah. One guy was named Tongueless Brett and the other one was named.
About shitty storytellers.
He's got a lot of stories about mutes with him, Helen Keller, and Tongueless Joe from Tampa.
There's a lot of mute motifs in my act. But yeah, Tampa was crazy. Like I had guns.
I thought Tampa was upscale Florida.
No.
Richie Rich.
No. Florida's mixed. You know, Carl Hiaasen is an author. He wrote about a lot about Florida. Florida's a really interesting place. There's a big Indian community, Native American, like Seminole, very, very, very Cuban. Cuban folds into white. White and Cuban.
I did the Miami Improv where nobody spoke English.
Now, Miami is Cuban, white, black. That's it. Oh, yeah. And then this
very
fucking,
little white.
And then Haitian and then Jamaican. Like they're really set up. But like Florida, Tampa was more like when I was a kid, Cuban and white were folded in together. I really kind of thought I was Cuban growing up, and my parents are from New York. They're both Irish Catholic.
Kreischer.
I know. But like growing up, I could speak Spanish. I could really? Oh yeah. Like I could understand Spanish. I played baseball, so like I mean to this day, when my daughter plays softball and she doesn't swing at a pitch, I go, buenos ojos, because that's what you hear. Good eyes, good eyes.
Good eyes, good,
good
eyes,
good eyes. Good eyes. ¿Dónde está pelota? Like, I really felt like my maturity, the growing up of when you become a man, was all around Cuban fathers. So, like, I have this,
but your father's not like that.
I love my dad. He wasn't entirely dialed into my childhood, I wouldn't say. Like, hold on, he was. I can't say that. That's not fair because my dad, if he ever heard this, would lose his shit. He coached all my baseball teams. He But like when I got to like time to start growing up, like 14 years old, I kind of like just kind of meshed myself and all my friends, like everyone does. And so, but the dads that were around were Cuban dads. Cuban dads would like curse and talk about fucking chicks and like, ah, you need a little beer.
And my father did not do that.
My dad did not do that.
Not do that.
If my dad knew that we had been drinking, he'd lose his mind. He's a lawyer. And so, but these dads, like.
So you grew up, you know, you didn't grow up in Shantytown. He's a lawyer in Tampa from New York.
He was a lawyer from Philly, from New York and Philly, yes. He represented the Church of Scientology my entire youth.
Was he a Scientologist?
No. Up until I was like 12 years old. So good money, knew L. Ron Hubbard, like legit.
I guess that was back in the day before really Scientology. Was it Dianetics still then, or was it Scientology?
What happened is someone tried to sue the Church of Scientology for what they did to that person, and my dad represented that person and he won. And then the Church of Scientology said, anyone who can beat us, we want.
That's pretty smart.
So they hired him and put him on retainer, a lot of money, and my dad had, and we were like fucking set. My dad buys a new house, interest rates are 13%, $130,000 house, dialed in, fucking buy the house. And then Church of Scientology fires him. Because you remember, the church is out of Clearwater.
13%. Can you imagine that nowadays?
I talked to my dad about this.
Isn't that crazy? Like, we were like, I'm not taking 375. I want 3.25 or I won't buy the house.
We're going to go up to 7%, I think. I think this economy, the way it's going. Yeah, and that's why I just put all my money in bonds. I talked to my business manager yesterday. I was like, I didn't say this. This is the problem with me telling stories, is I'm talking out of my ass. My business manager said to me, we should put it all in bonds.
It came off Hollywoodish. I'm not going to lie to you. It felt like the machine.
But my dad, the Church Scientology fired him, and then we grew up. I would say I grew up my formative years broke. Like, we had a nice house. We had no furniture in it. None. And so, like, you had rooms that were just empty because you couldn't furnish them. And then.
But it had great house.
Beautiful house on the lake.
So your dad was in the NBA.
Yeah, yeah.
I got a 42-bedroom house. Wait, it's not furnished.
Yeah.
I got 8 cars. Look at my garage.
Yeah. I didn't realize I had to put furniture in all these rooms.
How many siblings?
2 sisters.
And that's it, you. Are you the oldest, youngest?
I'm the oldest.
You're the oldest.
They both live in L.A. Like, we used to call each other Big Team. That was what we called.
So you're close?
Real fucking close.
That's
like,
cool.
To the point where my wife got bothered by it.
Well, that's weird.
Well, not really. So, like...
It's weird.
Nah.
Because you guys are that close. Like, you kiss on the lips.
No, not that close.
You touch bathing suit parts. Like, weird stuff goes down.
No, the night we found out we were pregnant, we brought my sisters to Lowry's, and we told them we were pregnant, and one of my sisters is like, this is going to ruin our fucking dynamic. Like, this is going to ruin Big Team.
That's kind of creepy.
And my wife's like, I think you're meant to say congratulations.
I think that's what you meant.
And they, like, we rented a house on Detroit Street, 935 Detroit Street. They rented a house at 735 Detroit Street, like right down the street. Like, it is really incestuous. Wait,
and they
like,
stayed together.
They still live together. My one sister's married and pregnant, and they still live together with her husband. Yeah,
why do you think that is? Were you guys against your parents? It seems like you grew up pretty happy as kids. You're just really tight. Are you close in age?
My parents went through a divorce, or tried to split up when I was in college.
This is where it all starts to fall apart, Andy. And you won't even be close to the craziest fucking stories we've heard.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God.
Really?
This is why this whole thing happened. And all of a sudden, I start talking to all these people. Every single person was like, yeah, here's my upbringing. And they're different, but they're the same.
Yeah.
It's crazy how we all went through the same shit, even though it's different. So, yeah. So they separated.
They separated. My dad cheated on my mom. And at that moment...
It's very specific. It's not just they separated. There was somebody else involved.
Yeah, 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 yeah. And the three of us got really fucking close. Like, Cotty was 10, I think, at the time.
Okay,
maybe.
Well, that makes sense, yeah.
She was really young, and she's 10 years younger than me. I was 21.
Drinking age for you sounds like 21. It was 11. Was 11 21. Your drinking age?
I didn't really start drinking until I went to Russia, to be honest with you. I didn't really drink.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I partied a little bit, but not like a ton.
In high school, you weren't a lunatic?
No. I played baseball. I got recruited to play at Duke in the Citadel. Like, I was a legit baseball player.
Yeah.
But yeah, Cotty would come up to college when she was like 11 and spend a month with me because my parents were so fucking losing their shit.
It was just mayhem at home.
Spent a month. And then this kid would walk around fucking keg parties at 11 and collect money for a keg, and she'd clean up. She was like, it was a she would set up play dates because she's 11.
You know, if you did that today,
you'd
be arrested.
Yeah,
the whole fraternity would be disbanded. Somebody would have popped a video of an 11-year-old by a trash can full of Everclear and Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
You would have been lambasted. You would have been destroyed.
She would set up play dates with sororities. Like, she'd meet a girl. Like, and there were girls that I'd grown up with that Cotty knew when I was in high school that were in sororities.
Was a good bunch of your high school, did they all go to Florida State?
Yeah. You either went to Florida or Florida State, and if you couldn't get into either, you went to UCF.
What happened to Duke, man?
I don't know. I'm working on it as a bit right now with this Ralph Sampson story.
I mean, if somebody offers you to go to Duke,
I met this dude. I think his name is Jason Clark. I don't remember his name. John Clark, who was a tight end for our high school. Okay. He went to Duke, and I saw him, and I said, yeah, I'm getting recruited by Duke. And he goes, I'm worried about the school, like the study. And he goes, oh, don't worry. They give you tutors. You spend like 4 hours with a tutor every day. And I was like,
as long as your batting average is high enough.
I was like, yeah. I was like, I'm not fucking sitting with a tutor at all. I'm going to college.
Florida State, here we go.
I said, Florida State, I'll walk on and play Florida State. And I walked on the first day. Coach is like, I talked to your coach, said you're a dickhead. And I was like, oh, you talked to the right guy.
Were you a dickhead in high school?
No, it was always about jokes to me. Like, I could give two shits if, like, I always wanted to make people laugh.
We're really similar, man. I was the same. I got kicked out of classes because I just couldn't stop cracking jokes about shit.
Oh, comedy was like, I always thought, I just gravitated to making my friends laugh.
Right.
Like, to being the life of the party.
Why do you think, for me, I know it was kind of a self-defense. I was a redhead. I was kind of bullied when I was little, although I was a big athlete. I played sports, but it was always kind of an insecure thing to strike back out, to make joke of a situation. So, I mean, it's so odd to me that somebody comes out that blazingly funny out of childhood, because most people don't.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I don't know. I wish I could pinpoint it, but all I know is that, like, I never have been totally secure, so I never really, like, I never feel like I belong. So I always feel like even, and now
that's how I felt. It's insecurity.
Yeah, and I think now it leans towards like, it's less comedy, like in personal situations, right, and more like just agreeing with people. Like, I ran into a friend who will definitely remain unnamed this morning, and he said something kind of racist, but not like jokey racist, like sincere racist.
Yeah.
And
that's a really fine line, by the way, jokey to sincere racism.
Yeah, like the sincere, like, here's my problem with X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't agree with him. I definitely don't agree with him, but I didn't not agree with him there, because I'm like, okay, I'll just hear you out. And I was like, yeah, I see your point of view. And so, like, now I lean towards that. Like,
as opposed to standing up to him and go, dude, what you said's fucked up.
Man. I would have done that in high school and then made a joke about it. But now I just go, okay, all right. I think because I do so much comedy, the interest of being funny is, like, very sidebar to me. Like, right. I'm like, eh. But yeah, so I don't know. I just...
Are you ever serious? I mean, it's other people, if that guy had said something to somebody else who I know are friends, would just go, hey, let me stop you right there. What you're saying is not... the preferred nomenclature, dude.
I'd do it. Oddly enough, I'd do it with
even
liberals.
Even I cracked a joke about it. You can't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd do it with liberals. There's a dad. I won't say his name. He's a very famous dad, single dad. His kid used to go to our school. We're all having a big dinner. All the parents are around. And he starts he's very liberal, but he starts preaching from an ignorant liberal side. He says, I think it's just ridiculous. And now they're trying to tell me that the reason black kids don't play golf and hockey is it's because of the equipment. Black, we're all the same. We all have money. Like, we all have that. And I'm like, hold on 1 second. No, I can't hear this. But everyone's just nodding along, going like, yeah, that is.
Yeah, feels.
And I go, hold on, that's not accurate at all.
No, structurally, the legs, they're missing a muscle in their hamstring area, I believe, that dictates the... They could never open up for a driver. The swing wouldn't work at all.
I'm losing my shit, and I'm drunk. I've been drinking. I'd flown in from Vietnam that morning. And so I go, hold on. The reason that you don't see more black hockey players is exactly because it costs a ton of money to buy equipment, and you have to have someone who's willing to drive you to a rink every fucking day.
Five in the morning.
And I said, and Yeah, that's exactly why. And the reason they don't play golf is because you need greens fees and clubs. And the reason you see more black people playing basketball is because you don't need
anything.
You literally
show up.
You show up and you can play. And that is, yes. It's the same reason. You can find reasons for these, what you call race. Like, they're actual reasons. It's called economics. Like Malcolm Gladwell will tell you why this happened. And he goes, oh, so you're telling me that all these black kids that are playing basketball in their Jordans, that they don't have to pay $150 for their Jordans. And I go, and I light up and I go, oh, you don't know any black people. And he was like, excuse me? I said, you don't have any black friends. I go, holy shit, you don't know any black people. And he goes, what do you mean? And I go, black dudes don't play basketball in their Jordans. I go, Jordans are
meant for the club. They wear those out at night.
Yeah, they wear those out at night. And I start laughing hysterically.
That's awesome.
And then his son walks up and his son's adopted and he's black. And he's wearing fucked up Jordans. And I'm like, oh shit. And everyone's like, ah. And his son's like, Dad, you ready to go? And he goes, yeah, it's time to leave. And they walk out. And I'm like, why wouldn't someone say his son's black? Why didn't someone say, like, but yeah, that's the stuff that I stand up for is like when people.
That story had an ending.
It definitely had an ending.
It was just weird that a racist, it's almost like he was so racist, he goes, you know what I'll do? I'll adopt a black kid just so I can bring out my racist views, and then I can always go to the button and go, hey, look, I got a black kid. That's funny.
Yeah, he's a fucking mess.
You know, I used to get involved in those conversations, and as I got older and had kids of my own, now I just go, okay, buddy, and I walk away. I can't even get the Facebook rants. I don't comment.
Oh, my God.
I don't give a shit.
You're not going
to change. No one has ever been on Facebook and gone, you know what, you raised some good points, Bert. I'm actually changing my opinion. Never happened.
Never. I stay away from that. I don't read comments on Instagram. I'll fuck with Twitter because for the most part, it's all people giving positive stuff. And I do welcome constructed negativity. Like I said, I posted something one time about PETA. This is going to lose people right here, but I'm for PETA to a point. I believe in the.
I'm for animals.
Yeah, I'm for animals. I'm definitely for animals.
They should be ethically treated.
Yeah, 100%.
But I do love eating chicken.
Yeah,
I love an occasional burger.
I don't mind leather inside my interior of
leather
my car.
Pants. It's great. Yeah. It's great.
Leather pants.
Yeah, with the cinch, the Jim Morrison style. Those are tight.
And so this one, I posted something pro PETA. It was one of their thoughts, and I agreed with it. And this guy writes back, "Bro, you have no fucking idea what you're supporting. These guys are terrorists or whatever, this and that." And then I click his profile, and it's him with his dogs. And I'm like, I write back, I go, dude, fucking, you have dogs. How can you not kind of agree with what they're saying about these? I think it was about the hunting practices or something. And he writes back, dude, did you even read my name? And his name is a massive attack hunter. He goes, those are my hunting dogs. We hunt down animals and kill them. And I was like, oh, I go right back. I was like, yeah, I really didn't read any of that. I replied to the guy, didn't even check his screen name. But yeah.
I will, when people troll me, I usually go the opposite. I go, hey, man, you've raised some really great points. I'm going to take that all, and I'm going to really try to make my change in my life. I go that direction. Yes, and I kind of destroy them that way.
I did that. When we started Bert the Conqueror, I would write back to people and say, hey, who's this ass clown riding roller coasters? And I go, it's me. My name's Bert. And I don't look cool on this show, but give it a shot. And then they'd always write back and be like, sorry, man, I didn't know you'd read these. And I was like, yeah,
I'm a dick.
and then I realized I had a friend who was a comic who was fighting back with people. And I was like, dude, it's just like if you put a milk out, cats are going to come.
Yeah.
Like, you let everyone know that it affects you, and then they're like, oh, I'm bored
today. They wanted personal contact. They wanted response, and you gave it to them. So,
they're just baiting.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Are you still close with your mom and your dad?
Yeah. My mom and I are going to see my daughters play tonight. They fly out a lot. My dad was out here last weekend. My mom's at my sister's house, but coming to my house every afternoon. And yeah,
are your dad and your mom?
They're back together. Yeah, they got back together.
Oh, they are?
Yeah, they got back together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they got back together.
That's kind of a cool story.
Yeah.
Maybe. To go, like, say you cheated on your wife. Because I got news for you. My wife's not taking me back.
My wife never take me back.
She cut my balls off in my sleep, probably.
I have a joke about about not hitting my wife. The reason I don't hit my wife is because I've tried to hit people before and I've missed.
Yeah.
And you do not want to miss hitting your wife. Like, just, oh, shit.
In the first year of our baby's life, she was hormonal and crazy. I mean, there was nights I went to sleep where I was like, I was afraid she was going to kill me in my sleep. Like, hormonal, like, just losing her shit.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, yeah. And you're just like, at that point, I don't know what to do. And we survived it. But I honestly, if somebody had killed me, I would have been like, yeah, that's how that story ends.
Yeah, I always say if I end up missing, and everyone's like, I think his wife killed him, I'm like, just let her be. Like, don't investigate it. Yeah, I deserved it.
You had it coming.
I definitely deserved it. If my wife does end up killing me, yeah. I deserved it. That poor woman has not had a good night of sleep since we've been married because I snore. Like,
you do, don't you?
Oh,
you seem like a snorer.
And I snore on my side.
You drink. You're a great drinker, is my guess. You can drink. You, I mean, you drank with the Russian mob.
Yeah, I drink. I'm a good drinker.
Can you just drink all day long and not get fucked up?
I can. Yeah, I can. Like, I mean,
God damn, I envy that skill. I get hammered.
I get a couple cocktails and I'm like, I'm good. And then I can let it ride for a couple hours.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I keep going.
Oh, yeah.
If I had this many drinks and I'm having this much fun, well, obviously, if I have more drinks, I'll have mathematically.
I find that if it's later in the afternoon, if it's evening, I like last night, I got so fucked up, like obliterated. Sure. But because it's like 2 a.m. and I'm like, one more. Ah, well, let's do a shot. We ended up doing some shots. But like today, I'll have these two drinks and then I'll be fine. I Uber everywhere. I go home, I'll smoke a cigar, take a nap, and then get up. Go do some dad shit.
Well, let's talk about that, obviously.
How old are your kids now?
Yeah. I don't know.
No, seriously. Yeah, how old are they?
10 and 12. 10 and 12.
10 and 12.
Yeah.
Here's what we talked. Andy and I were talking before you came over, and I was like, I mean, we were reading, you know, the bio, and it's the Van Wilder, the crazy party dude, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, he's got a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And you know, it's part of an act, but it's not. That's who you are, and you're on the road like a maniac. But you also come home, and you have two kids that you've raised.
Yeah.
How do you do it?
I have no idea.
Dude, I have no fucking idea. Mine are 2 and 3 and a half, and I'm way too old for them to be that young as I sit with a Manhattan in my hand.
It's so funny you say that. I was talking to Bill last night. He just had a baby, and he's like,
I heard that.
Dude, I'm going to be an old dad. Like, what the fuck? And I was like, yeah, but I did it the other way. I was a young dad for Hollywood standards. I had my kids when I think I was 30, 32.
And at that time, you were a lunatic.
I was on the road every 50 weekend.
50 weeks a year.
50, yeah. And then going to the clubs every night. If I was in town, I was like,
the first year of my kids, my wife's like, yeah, you need to be home. Your wife's like,
But we didn't have any money. So
you go, I got to go. This
my wife was like, you need to do everything you can to. Yeah. My wife was working a day job. And she was like, my wife is a screenwriter. So the second we got pregnant, she's like, I'm going to stop screenwriting. I'm going to get a job. I'll work, but you need to not, like, you can't fuck around with this career shit.
If you're going
to
do it.
Yeah. Then. And so I was like, yep. And so I literally booked out, no joke, probably 50 weeks a year. And every weekend I was featuring, making $700. And then I started headlining.
Holy shit, dude.
I know.
I only did a handful of feature gigs because I just was like, because I was also older. I came here later. I was a Navy lieutenant before I moved here. And then I hit the road a few times, but it's fucking painful. And at the end of the day, you're like, you go home with $700.
After
it's
flying
crazy.
Yourself up.
You're losing
there,
money, basically.
And sometimes putting yourself up or staying on a friend's couch. And you're a dad. You're
brutal.
A fucking grand. You're a grown up. And then I started headlining. I started headlining at the Last Stop in Houston was my first headlining gig.
And probably still not a ton of money.
Was not. Well, you know what's so funny? Pete Pirelli, who was the owner of the club then, knew my situation. And I remember he paid me $3,000. And I was like,
thank you.
I
You're like,
was
thank
blown
you,
away. I was like, and so I do Laugh Stop. I do Laughs Unlimited in Sacramento, the Green Room in San Francisco.
Yeah.
I'd hit a couple, like the Tampa Improv a little bit, and do like Fallout weekends. So like I started doing Fallout weekends, but I do headline Thursday, Sunday, and then feature for Kevin Pollak on the weekend. And just every weekend gone. Every weekend gone.
How much time were you with the kids? I mean, were you
there? I'd get home Monday afternoon, and I would be there Monday night. We'd have a big dinner. My sisters would come over. And then Tuesday morning, Wednesday, I didn't have to do press, so I'd fly out Thursday.
Right.
And then be there for the Thursday night show.
So literally 2 days, 2.5 days a week.
2.5 days a week for probably, I can figure this out, probably 2.5 days a week for probably 6 years, maybe. And then I got offered birth. And by the way, I'm doing pilots too. So like, I probably did like 30 pilots total of like, you know, just the type of, you know, the type of show that we take where we just, it's like hosting shit. And so I did 30 of those.
Well, you did some sitcom pilots, I know, where they sold, you know, did the rights to your deals and stuff.
Pilots.
You'd
come in,
but you would shoot for a week and then back on the road.
Yeah. And so, and then they called me about Birth of Conqueror, and my wife was at her tipping point. It's so funny because my...
Well, talk about those first few years. I mean, was she... Because honestly, I'm not sure my wife would have got through it. She would have gone like, I'm leaving you. I'm going home and living with my parents. Because she, for the whole weekend, had those kids to herself.
Yeah. A single mom. She's a single mom.
I mean, she didn't... My wife would have lost her shit. She would not have taken it.
I think... I mean, I say this. It was... What was killing her was the job. Like, the working the job was killing her.
And you needed that job.
And we needed that job because it paid our rent. She worked in our apartment building.
Who washed the kids during the day?
We had a nanny. My maid paid for the nanny.
So you know family?
No.
We have a nanny too. And the problem is, it's like we're all East Coasters. And so we, other people out here are like, oh yeah, my mom takes the kids during the week or something. It's family. So any child care, we pay for.
My sisters were down the street. So if we wanted to go on a date, we could drop them off at my sister's house.
That's not bad.
But during the day, we had a nanny. And we're living in poverty. I'm making $700 a week. My wife is making less than that because the majority of her paycheck is going to free rent.
Where are you living?
Detroit. 435 Detroit Street.
Oh, this is in
L.A.
Okay.
L.A., Detroit Street.
And you're just renting a place on Detroit.
Not even renting it. We have, well, by the way, we have a nicest place in the building because my wife's the apartment manager.
Okay. And All right. That's cool.
So it's a good place. Everything's covered.
There's two kids at this point.
Two kids.
Do you have them back to back, Irish twins?
No, 2 years apart.
2 years apart.
And by the time Isla showed up, I was headlining. Isla showed up and Aaron at the Improv saw me do stand-up one night. And it was like you always say you have one set that changed your life, you know. That's what everyone says. And for me, what happened is my friend got cheated on by some famous actor. He fucked his girlfriend, and he walked in and he caught them. And he came to my house and he was crying. He was crying uncontrollably. And I walked up on stage. The first thing I said was, "My buddy came into my house crying this morning. The only thing funnier than better than making people laugh is turning the screws and watching people cry harder." And in the middle of my set, he called. He called me. And I said, shh, this is him. I'm going to take this call. I'm going to see if I can get him to cry. So he goes, hello. And I said, hey, buddy, how you doing? And he goes, not so good. And the place was, it's the best laugh I've ever gotten because everyone wanted to laugh, but they couldn't because they didn't want him to hear him. So they're fucking shaking in their chairs. And he starts sobbing uncontrollably. And Erin saw it. She called me the very next morning. Isla had just been born. And she goes, I'm going to change your life. Make sure you work for the rest of your life. She goes, don't let Barry Katz fuck this up. I'm going to give you 13 offers by mid-afternoon. Just say yes. Just accept them. Don't try to negotiate. Just accept them. I didn't realize what was going on.
I've never heard of that, dude.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
I mean, that's one of the biggest, and I know Erin, she's amazing.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
She just booked you in clubs around the country.
Let's call Erin real quick. It's a fun. I wonder if I have
Who is Erin for those
Erin
of us?
Von I always fuck her last name up. Erin von Schoenfeld.
And what does she do?
Ran the Improv.
She ran the Improv.
The Hollywood Improv.
Let's see.
For those of us who don't know who runs places.
I forget there's people listening. Yeah. I honestly got lost in the Manhattan here.
And so...
we might run a little long today, Andy. You okay?
What's up?
Who knows?
Hey, can I talk to Erin von Schoenfeld? She literally...
Changed your life.
It changed my life.
And every time you tell the story, you have to call her, I feel like. It's part of it.
I haven't told her. I mean, we haven't talked about this since that happened. But I remember I was sitting in my underwear. I had done the show that night. She called me in the morning. Yo, is Erin around?
sure, man.
It's Bert. Tell her I'm on a podcast and I want to talk to her.
Not even a last name. He's a one-name artist, like Madonna.
She better not know another Bert.
I don't know.
And so...
It's Albert, right?
Hang on 1 second. Erin, you're on a podcast right now.
That's exciting.
I'm telling the story.
Like, it's crazy.
Tell me if I veer from the truth at all this. Erin came out to see Chris Porter, as did a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
He performed. I closed the show because they wanted another co-headliner. Everyone left and left with Chris. Erin stayed and watched me. I told a couple jokes, one of which was a joke that she always says, is that going to be on your special about wanting to date a black chick? And the next morning she called me and she said, you are my new favorite comic. I will make sure you work for the rest of your life. I'm sending over 13 offers. Don't let Barry Katz fuck these up. Just accept them. Is that correct?
That's pretty accurate. I think that's spot on.
And it changed my life. I've been working every day since. And when I think of who I'm grateful for in this business, it was Aaron for deciding not to leave the room and watch me do stand up. And I'm telling you, it is that moment that changed my life as a comic.
Aww. I'm getting chills and getting all teary-eyed.
No, I thank you so much.
You're so good at getting people to cry.
Yeah.
Yeah. All he does is make people, he calls them and makes them cry on the phone. It's scary.
Yeah.
What podcast are you on?
We're doing a podcast called Can You Get My Money Up in D.C. that's coming October.
I gotta go.
Hi, Aaron. It's Jamie Kaler, and we're talking parenting and kids.
Wonderful phone call in my work day. No. I appreciate it very much.
I love you. Thank you so much for everything you've done for me. Thank you.
I love you, too. Bye.
All right, bye.
That's hilarious.
So, yeah. And
I love that he came on to talk about kids and parenting, and he's like, all right, here's the greatest day of my life. Nothing to do with birth, children.
Okay.
I was just set at the improv, and I called a friend.
So you ready for the greatest two? I only have four great memories as a father. That's it. Four.
That's teaching more than most.
Each of my daughters to swim.
And you thought we were going to run long.
Trust me, those four are going to be an hour and a half.
Teaching each of my daughters to swim and teaching each of them how to ride a bike. Those were like dad moments where I hit it out of the park. I was patient. I was focused. And each of my daughters, like, you taught me how to swim. You taught me how to ride my bike. And Isla was the best. Georgia.
I'm guessing they did it on a Monday or a Tuesday.
Yeah.
Sad. Those kids are going to be like one of your kids is going to write a book later. It's like Mondays and Tuesdays with my dad.
Yeah.
That's it. Well, what about the other days? Oh, no, we never saw him. He was on the road partying like a machine.
Oh, I'll tell you a story I'm doing in my act right now that is my agent said, do not tell this story. She's like,
my wife usually says that about most of my stories.
There was a period when we first had Georgia where she wasn't connecting with me. She was like, you know, a couple months, a few months old. Mm-hmm. And she just didn't want me. Like, if she came to me, she'd cry. And I said to my wife, I was like, why doesn't she like me? She's like, well, it's because I connect with her. Every day I feed her. So, like, I literally connect.
You weren't there.
And she goes, yeah, we're attached. And now I'm her food. And I was like, okay. So one morning, I'm watching Tough Crowd. And I'm having a cup of coffee, and Georgia's not having it. Leanne's sleeping, and I go, I wonder if I offer her the tit, like if she'd accept it. Mm-hmm. So I just lean forward, show her the tit, and she latches on like a great white shark, just clunk. And I'm like,
she doesn't know any better.
Fuck!
She doesn't know there's nothing in there.
And immediately I try to pull her off. But if you know anything about breastfeeding, you can't pull a face off a tit. You've got to pop it off with a finger. But I didn't know that move. But I had stopped two dogs from fucking one time. So I go to take a stick. No, I'm kidding.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Because I was going to say it's impossible.
It's so hard to take.
Once dogs are fucking, there's no stopping them. No, they finish.
Dude, I had to stop two dogs from fucking.
Same with lactating.
Yeah, but no, when I taught
my
daughter.
So you breastfed your child?
She latched on. Nothing came out.
Oh, really? Nothing came out?
Yeah.
That's so weird. You don't have milk?
No. Isn't that crazy?
No, that's nuts. And I'm sure you have monkey, like furry, hairy chest. She must have been like, what's this hair about?
I pull her. Leanne had to come out and pop her off. And then Leanne was like, and George is gagging. She's got hair in her mouth. She's like, and Leanne's like, what the fuck happened? And I was like, I told Leanne, I go, I fell asleep. Like, I was leaning forward and I fell asleep.
You lied to your wife.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
But yeah, when I taught Isla how to ride a bike, we didn't know that she had needed glasses yet. So
I think everyone can fill in the story from there. But yeah.
She's kind of thinking, is that a wall? No, you'll be fine. Went up the road one time. Back down the road.
And that's the last we saw of her.
And then the next time she ran into a BMW that was parked, set the alarm off, and was on the hood. Like there was just, it was a white BMW.
Of course she was.
And there was a body imprint on the BMW. We took her for a bike ride that night. She ran into a trash can, a stop sign. She ran into fucking like nine different things.
And were you guys like,
she
maybe
was that
can't
blind.
See.
How can she, you not
and,
know it?
And by the way, I had put a GoPro on George's helmet for the bike ride. Because Isla's first bike ride. And Isla hits the first trash can. And Georgia looks at me and she goes, I got it.
That's funny.
Yeah.
It's back to the Helen Keller. It's mutes and blindness.
Mutes and blindness.
That'll be hilarious. Were you there for the births?
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't skip those.
No, I was there. Well, for Georgia's, I was broke. So we had to induce because I had to do the road on Thursday.
I was going to say, because at that point, you can't really cancel gigs the day before.
Mm-mm. I was working with Dave Attell.
Oh, my God.
And I literally was like, am I going to not go on the road with Attell? He's doing Insomniac at the time.
By the way, one of my favorite comics of all time.
My favorite comic.
And I didn't really know him that well, and I did a show in New York with him. I was like, oh, my God, he's the greatest person on earth.
Oh, I can't imagine watching Attell if you don't know him that well. You're like...
I didn't know him. And then he interviews. Like, I came up after him, and he kind of hosted, and then we interviewed him on stage, and I was like, oh, my God, that's fucking Dave Attell. Like, I kind of got a little starstruck.
He's phenomenal.
Like, God damn, that's fucking Dave Attell. But it took me a while to go, oh, yeah, he's one of the greatest comics of all time. Yeah.
I'm doing a festival with him in Vegas in July, and I honestly, half the reason I accepted it, or no, in this month, in next week, half the reason I accepted it was because he was going to be there.
Yeah.
Because I idolize him.
He's like, the best. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So you saw The Kid's Born, and then you're like, see you later. Got to go feature.
Yep. Featured, started headlining. Aaron saw me. Isla was born. And
it's a quick story, but it's over years.
Oh, yeah.
It's like when people go, yeah, what happened? Oh, I booked this show, and then I took off. No. You busted your ass on the road.
I've been on the road straight.
25
legit.
Years.
No.
20.
18.
18 years.
Probably 18 years. But I've been doing stand-up 18 years total. I've been on the road straight for probably 15.
And you're still?
I'm still on the road.
A monster. Go ahead and press.
I'm in Honolulu, May 31st. The road's changed,
Tell
obviously.
People where to go. BurtKreischer.com.
BurtBurtBurt.com. I think if you go to BurtKreischer, too, but you'll never figure that one out. BurtBurtBurt.com. And you can see all my tour dates are posted there. It's so funny the way comics work right now. They have a tour. I'm on tour. This is the name of my tour. I'm like, yeah, I call it the road.
It's the road, and it's 50 weeks a year.
Yeah,
I do it. This is tour 2017 for you.
Yeah. Yeah. They're like, are you going to name this tour? I go, yeah, it's called work.
It's called paying my kids' school bill.
It's been going good. This year's been really good to me.
Well, the Russian thing blew you up to it.
The Russian thing
started selling out gigs.
Changed my touring entirely. Like I have not had a show that hasn't sold out all year.
It's so crazy,
which
man.
Is but it's crazy. But then if you're a real comic,
we had Joe Coy come do the show a couple weeks ago, and he's the same. He's huge. But I think you guys are kind of.
No, he's doing theaters. Like he's him. He's fucking massive.
He's got a huge audience.
It's funny if you're.
But he's the same as you. Like every time people go, oh, I wish I had that. Hey, did you do 20 years on the road?
Yeah.
Like he's been on the road. Like he and I did New Faces together, whatever, years and years and years ago. And since then he's been on the road every week, 50 weeks a year.
I was sitting with comics last night at the store who were talking about like, I want to get back into the road. And I was like, nah, man, that's not how that works. You really don't because if you did, you would have never left it.
And you can't also. Once you leave it for a while, it's hard to go back.
It's hard to get back in.
That's what happened to me. I was on the road and then I had the kids and I stayed home. Because I could do other things and make a living.
Well,
and
you're multifaceted. There's a lot of us. Like, I'm not that good of a TV host. Like, I'm kind of a much better comic podcaster.
Yeah.
And then, you know, my acting chops are suspect. I mean, I'm doing a pilot in August, but I'm not like you. Like, I can't just go into an audition and make, like, you know, a nut for the year.
You're you. But that's
I can only do Bert. I got one speed. It's Bert.
Most actors can only do themselves. I love when people are like Bruce Willis is playing Bruce Willis. That's who he is.
Yeah,
he's a jackass.
Bruce Willis is playing Bruce Willis.
He's gonna shoot you in the head. That's what he's doing. James, they're all the same.
Yeah,
very few people are actors, so it is one of those things. But yeah, it's crazy though to be able to do that because I felt lucky instead of like so many friends I know like you are like leaving their kids.
It really stinks. I talked to Chris Hardwick one time and he was like, why would you even choose to do this if you couldn't? Why would you choose to be a dad if you're going to be gone all the time?
That's the question.
And I feel like going, I didn't pick it. Like, I didn't know that this is the life. Like, I just was like, I want to be a comic and then I want to be a parent also. I want to have a real life. And if the transfer of that is that I got to go away sometimes.
Yeah.
And then, hey, the upside is that if I work hard enough at it, I can make some money and then I can support a family and I can have a good time.
Yeah.
And I can take my wife and kids to Honolulu and do a show and have it pay for itself. So, like... You know, I would love to be like a fucking, I don't know if I'd love to be like a third lead on a sitcom, but I'd love to have my own sitcom, shoot it, CBS Radford, ride my bike over there every day. I'd love that.
When I moved here, I wanted to be Ted Danson. That's who I wanted to be. I was like, if I had any career in throughout history, probably Ted Danson.
He's got a pretty good career.
Where you go,
he
doesn't even have to write. You know, like most of us, they go, well, if you want to do it, go write your own thing. And it's like Ted Danson just cheers to Becker to a couple movies.
I said to someone,
he never wrote a word. He goes, yeah, I'll read that on camera. And he plays Ted Danson.
Yeah.
He's really good at playing Ted Danson.
If someone said, what advice do you have for a young comic? I go, oh, this is my question to you. Are you interested in starting a production company? Being a writer, director,
publicist, social media guru.
Social media, like, because that's what it is these days, not just telling jokes.
I used to write jokes and work on bits 90% of my time, and then 10% was like, hey, come see my show. Now it's like I do 10% of like trying to create material, and then 90% of like, okay, let me make sure this is up on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and let me make sure that people are following, and I'm trying to boost. It's like, you're a publicist at this point.
Yeah. I'm really good at social media. I'm so much better than any network I've ever worked at.
Yeah.
Like, I've had networks come to me and say stuff, and I go, you know what you should do? Like, Travel Channel, I love them to death, but they were like, I said, you know, we're doing the last season of Birth to Conquer. I said, what you should do is we have a lot of viral clips inside there. You should chop them up, post them on Facebook. They'll get a ton of views. And they're like, we don't really, like, our focus is making television. We don't, like, we've got someone that runs that. And I'm like, yeah, you got an 18-year-old who just knew what Periscope was before you, so you hired them. Yeah. They're not good at it. They just happen to be young. And you're not young. You're old. You're a 40-year-old male or woman. And I said, trust me. They didn't do anything. Show doesn't rate. I think we want to, you know,
part ways. That's why they're all going away.
And then they post, one of these kids sees a Birth Conqueror clip, posts it, and it gets 120 million views.
Yep. Isn't that crazy? And all of a sudden people go, hey, we should watch that show.
Yeah, 120 million views. My daughter just texted me, who's picking me up?
And you're texting her back. I don't have time for that. I'm drinking mom. Jameson.
I'm halfway through a glass of Jameson, so.
Call mom. What? Like, why? She... Our connection is that I take her to school. I pick her up from school. But like on days like today and like next week, I'm doing a podcast. And then she just still goes like, where are you? I'm like, I'm doing so. I'm working. She goes, it's not work. You're just hanging out with your friends.
Every time I do anything like this, my wife's like, what'd you get paid? How much? Well, nothing, babe. It was a podcast.
Can I tell you a secret?
Yeah.
My wife was so shitty about my podcast. Because people come over.
When you first started it.
For four, yeah, I don't know. I've had my podcast 4 years, maybe. I don't know. 3 years?
Yeah.
Maybe two. Let's say two. First year and a half, she's like, I don't get this. So you're going to have you and Joey Diaz and Ari Shaffir are going to sit in your man cave and get drunk? And she goes, that's not fucking work. And I go, nah, people enjoy it. And she's like, yeah, but it's not like work. Like, just don't do a podcast this week. And then we monetized it.
Yeah. And she's like, oh.
My wife is starting her podcast tomorrow. Swear to God. She's trying to think of a name. It's her and two other moms from the school arguing about facts in their life that they find important. What's better, Target or Walmart? And they're going to just fucking go off on it. And I was
Momcast.
Like, yeah, well,
it's Target, by the way.
I think they're, yeah.
It's Target.
I'd argue Walmart because I like that Walmart takes a look at the thumbprint of a community and then puts merchandise in there. It's not just across the board buying like Target. Like you can't just buy a shirt at Target and then rock it. Like sometimes you're like, oh, everyone's got that shirt, that little workout gear, the G7 workout gear. You can't rock that at the gym. But if you go to Walmart and you see a shirt that's got an American flag all over the front and all over the back, you're like, I can take that to LA and it looks cool. Like that's why I like Walmart. They take a look at the thumbprint of the community. So,
do they? I guess. There's a Walmart now in Burbank.
Yes, and they sell for Burbank. Like
it's
if you go
so
into
sketchy.
It,
I went into it recently.
I love
no, Target,
Walmart.
Target.
I love.
See, this is your wife's podcast.
Yeah, so she starts it tomorrow, and now she's like, you know, if I can get like 50,000 downloads, they say I can monetize it. Do you think I can get 50,000 downloads?
No, I don't think you can get 50,000 downloads.
I was like, good luck, honey.
Jeez, that's a lot of downloads for her.
She knows what I get.
For somebody
like,
who has no.
She's like, if I go on your podcast and promote it, then I mean, I probably get like a fraction. I could probably get to 50,000. And I was like. So I'm going to promote it. I'd love for it to be fun for my wife. I want her to have an outlet. You know, if she wants to do it, do it. But I go, it's a fucking job. Like all these times you thought I was just getting drunk in my man cave. You got to do it every week. You got to post it every day on the same time. You can't slack. You got to read copy. You got to prepare. Like it's a job. And she was like, I'm in. So she starts tomorrow. We don't have a name yet.
Oh, I'm totally doing this wrong. Then I have no copy whatsoever. We just
I have none.
I call it Momcast.
Dude. Here's where you put your work in the same as I did. It's like you got on stage a million times and that's, you have a skill that other people don't have. It's, you're a storyteller. And so people want to hear it. And so does she have that?
She is brutally honest.
Okay. There's your name. There's the podcast.
Brutally honest.
Brutally
with
honest.
Kreischer.
Brutally honest.
She is like the joke
every
in our
week
house.
She should just review your podcast and go, here's where Bert fucked up this podcast.
She is such, like, I always say she's a bitch. Like, if you didn't know her, you'd think she's a bitch because she just is so, like, huh? What? Like, if you, the joke in our house is if you want to feel good about yourself, ask my sister's opinions. If you want the truth, ask Leanne.
My wife's so nice to everyone else, and then she comes home and unleashes, and I'm like, hey, can you be nice to me like you are to them? And she goes, no, that's what you're here for.
Yeah.
You're the palate cleanser so I can get through the day and sleep tonight.
But she's cool. Like I said, I go, I'm going to Uber over to this podcast, and she goes, why? I said, well, I think I might have a sip of whiskey. She's like, okay, all right, cool. And I was like, no judgment.
Yeah, once
no
you monetize, the key word was monetize in the last 5 minutes.
Well, we did.
My husband drinks for a living.
Yeah.
When we sat with our financial business manager and our financial planner yesterday,
yeah,
and they looked at our income, they were like, because I walked away from Travel Channel going like, trust me, it'll come somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it's been my podcast. I'm making more money on my podcast than I was on Travel Channel.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, I would never go back to television. Like, I don't know why I go back to television. I'll just keep doing this thing I love,
right,
and really focus my energy in it and see how big it gets.
You know, it is. It's the way of this next generation, too. I think our kids are going to grow up to the point where we used to kind of, we came in, fell into the system and tried to be like, how do I work my way up the system? Now kids are like, fuck that. I'll create it myself.
When we were kids, we were like, I remember being like, I can be on Travel Channel?
Right.
I got an offer from History Channel?
Yep.
Like,
yep.
Shut up.
I thought the same
like,
thing.
I was like, that's my, I remember being like,
Hardwick
that's my.
Hardwick was kind of one of the first guys to go, hey, man, I'm just going to create exactly my own world. And then they all came running to him. And in a way, you're like, God damn, man, that's he's going to go down as kind of one of the geniuses of our generation, really, to go like, I don't need you.
Hardwick, I think he is, I don't think people understand exactly what he did for what we do. I think he did. Now, I definitely would say I don't know all the aspects of everything, but like he created a network and monetized a form of art. Monetize it. That's the most important part. Is that we can always say Rogan and Maron and all those people, but Rogan and Maron were their own ships in the sea. They did right. Their own thing and they monetized it. But Hardwick did it for other people, monetized it, and then he sold it. And he just, you know, that's a big deal. You know,
he worked really hard on it, man. 24/7, he busted his ass and. And but he did kind of create, we always used to, because we all did stand-up together, and we'd be like, and he was the one who's like, I'm just going to do my own thing, and he created this thing. So I think nowadays, kids today, it's like, you don't have to fall into a system.
Yeah.
The internet has definitely set it up so you can just go, I'm going to make whatever I love, I'm going to do that, and I'll find my niche market, and then off I'll go.
Yeah, and that's right now for me, it's stand-up. And yeah. I used to have they do a pie chart of how much money I earned in different things, like different colors, and it used to be like 7 different colors. And
who
now
does
it's,
that, your business manager?
Yeah. Now it's 2 colors. It's 3 colors: merchandise, podcast, and stand up. And I was like, those are my. If I looked at all those 7 ones the year before, I'd be like, oh, that takes a lot of time.
Are you
figure.
A smart merch guy? Joe Coy is the. By the way, talk about innovators. I remember seeing him in the airport years ago, where he had all of his stuff like carrying yeah. suitcases because that's how he made his money. Tons and tons of merch.
I did. This is me bragging. But I would say I revolutionized the merch game for my friends in that we looked at it as we looked down upon dudes who sold merch. Back in the day.
I used to feel that way.
We used to look at it like, oh my God, he's selling merch.
He would do a 5-minute bit to close his thing. And hey, by the way, here's a 3-minute bit about a t-shirt. But on the way out, do come by, say hi, and buy a t-shirt. But you don't have to buy a t-shirt.
I got 2 kids. They need dental bills. Yeah. And
I hated that.
And then I say I revolutionized it. That's obviously a massive overstatement, but I did the machine story. Rogan told me, you should make a shirt. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll make a shirt. And I was like, I'm above that. And then I made this shirt, the machine shirt. I gave it to Rogan. He wore it on his podcast. And we did a podcast. And I remember the first night we woke up that morning, my wife would get alerts on her PayPal. And she's like, we made $10,000 on shirts.
Shut up.
Dude, within 3 months, we had cleared 6 figures on shirts. And then all of a sudden, everyone I knew was like, fuck, I'm making shirts.
Yes!
Like, everyone.
I gotta make some shirts.
Yeah, dude. That machine shirt, it's. I mean, we still to this day, go to my burtburtburt.com, grab a machine shirt. We got 4 different colors. It's still like.
I see people all the time in them, and I'm like, hey, I know Bert. Yeah,
dude, I drove down the street one time, and I saw a dude walking down the street in my shirt, and I was like, shut the fuck up. But yeah, that. And then we all started making shirts. We all started working with merch because we were all like above that. LA, New York comics were like, we don't do merch.
I felt like that. But it's so smart. Guys who like and buy and go, no, dude, this is a job. I used to be like, it's not a job. It's art. It's craft. The truth is you have kids and you're like, this is a job.
Yeah. I have probably 5 shirts. I'm coming out with a new shirt. I was in a band in college. We kicked out the guitarist. He formed a band called Creed. And so the name of the band we were in was called Giving Out Spankings. So I'm making these cool summer tank tops.
That's funny.
They say Giving Out Spankings and tattoo writing. It's just
hopefully it's just a mesh half shirt.
Dude, I wish. I was just in Canada and I was like, can you make a tank top? And they just made me one and I liked it. And my wife's like, we'll make more. So we're making 1,000.
That's funny shit. All right. Listen, we've gone on incredibly long. We talked some about children. But I love that. It was interesting.
It was organic.
I love that.
Yeah, I always.
We got a taste.
That's
of
what I dig
family.
About being on a podcast. Is it? You
never know where it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, and plus you live a mile away. I'll make you come back. A couple questions I like to wrap it up with. What are some traits that you hope your kids get from you?
From me?
Yes. They're your children. They're blood of your blood.
I hope
besides selling merch, what's a good trait that you hope they get?
The only trait I hope they get from me, the only one out of everything I have that is good and bad with me, is I hope they can make themselves giggle. Because I can make myself giggle. I can think of something funny and giggle. That's it.
That's a good one, Andy. We never heard that one.
It is a new one.
It's amazing. I don't know, we've done this a bunch, and everybody comes up with something pretty clever where you're like, yeah.
I'm really good. I love to laugh.
Love life, it feels. Every time I see you on stage, and I think that's what's so genuine, is that you seem like you're having a good time, which I'm sure some nights you're not. But you fake it pretty well.
I have a good time. If I'm on stage, I go, I'm here. I'm in the moment. I love to laugh. And that's why I love going to comedy clubs. I sit in the back and I giggle.
I'm a great audience member.
I'm a little judgy too, but I can definitely come up with a thought. Like I had a thought the other day. This is just a thought. I didn't share this as a bit. It was just me and a Buffalo Wild Wings. And I just had the thought of a very confident 16-year-old boy taking a girl on her first date, and him walking into Buffalo Wild Wings for their first date, and she's nervous, she's 16, and he sits down, and confidently he looks at the waitress, and he goes, I'll order for both of us, because he knows that's what confident men do, and he's like, we'll be doing the Buffalo Wild Wings challenge, and then looking at her going, this is going to be fun, and then them doing the 5 hottest wings challenge, I just could not stop giggling at this kid going, I'll be ordering for both of us. And that's not a bit. I never do that on stage. Like a perfect example is I thought to myself one time, wouldn't it be funny? This is just, and by the way, it does not go anywhere. I can never use this as a bit. Wouldn't it be funny if just for fun, you tried to roofie your friend? Like not, but didn't have a drug. No. Didn't have a drug, but you just, like when he wasn't looking, you pretended to put a pill in his thing. And I would do it to my friends. I'm just making myself laugh. My friend would look away and I'd pretend to put a pill in his drink.
Like a Tic Tac or something.
And I would just make myself laugh. And I hope my daughters get that. I hope my daughters can make themselves laugh.
But I hope they don't roofie people. What's a trait that you hope your kids don't get from you?
All of them. I hope they
That's
don't.
Pretty funny.
I hope that I hope that I always used to say, I hope that in college they can just throw the frisbee as opposed to needing to get high to throw the frisbee. Like, I hope that they don't have anxiety the way I do, the panic the way I do, obsessive compulsiveness the way I do. I hope that they can turn it off. They can sit and read a fucking book or just go to sleep unassisted.
Wouldn't that be good to be able to turn it off?
We call them unassisted sleeps in our house, where you go to sleep with no booze, weed, pills, nothing. Just lay down and close your eyes and go, good night, world.
How rare are those? Does that
happen? I've got 7 logged this full year.
Oh, 7. That's pretty high. That's,
yeah, for March, May.
Yeah, that's pretty.
Yeah. I hope they get none of my traits.
All right, this is the final question. What's a mantra, a life slogan that you would pass on to your kids? If you're gone one day from this earth and your kids are like, you know, my dad taught me one thing, what would it be that they would say? You're already laughing, which I love. You should hear some of the ones we've heard. We've heard some crazy ones.
I have so many.
You can do more than one.
I have... But they're all like references of things I've said in jokes. Like, one would be party hardy.
Like another. It's always good to pass on to your kids. Yeah, just party remember, hardy. Honestly, though, I think in life, what party doesn't mean get fucked up.
No,
like
party hardy.
Party just hardy. Party enjoy hardy. The moment.
Yeah. Dude, Carpe Diem is probably the first thing I ever heard that I really connected with. I heard it, obviously, in that fucking movie. It's not like I'm a brilliant guy. But Carpe Diem was something I really, truly believed in all through college, all through my entire life. Seize the day. Don't ever say no to anything. Eat shit, cash checks. That's another one I have.
I think we have a winner. Eat shit, cash checks.
Yeah, eat shit, cash checks. That's, it defines every job I've ever had.
You know,
eat shit, cash checks. Hey man, they you got to fly in early on Wednesday to so you can do press Thursday morning and eat shit, cash checks. Hey man, we need you to jump off the stratosphere. Eat shit, cash checks. Hey, you got to jump off a plane with Rachel Ray. Eat shit, cash checks. That's my dad's thing. And then one day I realized eat shit, cash checks isn't necessarily the way to live your life. You should have
it
a little
is.
Pride.
It is, Bert. Oh, my God. That's, shit, honestly, shit, Andy, that's one of the checks. Best ones I've heard.
It's pretty fun.
I honestly, when I started, I would be like, no, I'm not coming in a day early. But you're right. I look back now and I burned some bridges because I was like, I probably was a dick. And I was like, no, I don't want to do that.
Hey, Bert, Alonzo's running late. Bill is going to close the show. Do you mind hosting? Eat shit, cash checks. Of course. Of course I'll host. I have no ego involved with what I do.
I had ego. I cared, oh, and I didn't no want ego. To be the guy, and I just didn't want to do it. I
hey,
said,
Bert,
fuck it, I don't want to do it.
Can you host in the belly room on Tuesday nights because Ari's out of town? Eat shit, cash checks.
I do think that comes from having kids, though, because now that I have kids, I used to turn, like, friends would call me years ago and go, hey, come do a podcast. I'm not doing a fucking podcast. I'm not doing that shit.
Let me tell you something.
Now I have kids, I'm like, hoping that something would catapult and something take off. And then I started to realize I do actually enjoy performing.
First of all, I love podcasting. I love this art form. So that's me. Check out laughable.com. It's an app that we have that is so fucking great. You can find Jamie on Laughable, and then you can find any podcast he's on. You can see all his performances. You can follow him as a comic. It's just such a great app.
Laughable.com.
Laughable.com. But listen to me when I say this. This is that eat shit, cash checks mentality. When you said, would you like to do my podcast? Now, I'm certain that there would be people that would be like, I'm only home for a couple days. I don't know.
Yeah.
The way I look at it is I'm talking to you right now. You, listening right now. I just got you as a fan. I just got you, that one person. You'll come to my show.
Yeah.
You'll come to my show and maybe you'll buy a fucking shitty shirt or buy my book. Or maybe you'll go, what's Bert's podcast like? And you'll check out my podcast. You, I'm talking to you right now in your ear. This is so intimate. That's what I look at. Eat shit, cash checks. If you want me to do your podcast, I'm fucking there. If I'm in Calgary and you got a podcast that's got 600 subscribers, I'll fucking do it. Come to the green room, eat shit, cash checks. That's the way I look at it. If you can get one fan at a time, I'm fucking
You're
in.
Building the fucking wall of fans.
Dude,
I love it,
but
man.
All you need is 1,200 fans to make a living. And I'm at like
Do you know what?
Yeah.
That's my new goal. Dude, Bert Kreischer, thank you so much for coming to join me.
I love this buzz I have
you
right
are the
now so
best.
Much. This has been the
You
like,
can take
the
that
perfect.
Bottle of whiskey with you. We might have to drive him home.
No, I got an Uber.
Thanks as always to my producer and buddy, Mr. Andy Lerner.
Always fun.
Bert, you got to come back, man.
Definitely.
You're the fucking king. I love
Definitely.
It.
Definitely. Let's do a late night one where we just go
We
all
just
all
talked
night.
About it. We yeah. mentioned it before you got here because I was mixing drinks and I go, we should do three or four of us out in the jacuzzi. Bert's in a Speedo.
Oh.
Go around the fire.
I like the,
smell
of this already.
Fucking ring it up, man. All right, that's enough. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. Huge thanks to my guest, Mr. Bert Kreischer. You can find him at BertBertBert.com. Laughable.
With an E. BertBertBert.com.
BertBertBert.com. But Bert Kreischer. Google him. Go check out his shit. Come see him live. He's a rock star live. That's it for today. We'll see you guys next time here on Father Time.